according to the 1967 Outer Space Treaty through the United Nations, this is the main treaty governing space, you're not allowed to claim sovereignty. So Musk can't go, he's not supposed to be able to go and say, this part of Mars belongs to us. But, you know, would the Trump government, you know, keep Elon Musk in line? Yeah, I don't know what would happen there.
Kelly, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So you don't have a space background, but you wrote this extraordinary book about space settlement. So can you tell me how you first got into this subject?
Sure. So I had written a book about emerging technologies with my husband, Zach Wienersmith, and we had two chapters in that book that were sort of tangential to space settlement. So one of them was about how the cost of launching mass to space was going down quickly, and that was mostly about SpaceX. And another one was about getting resources from space, and that was mostly about asteroid mining. And both of the communities that we talked to for those topics had a bunch of space settlement advocates in them who were telling us that space settlements are right around the corner. The only thing that was holding us back is that it's expensive to send mass to space. And now we can afford to send, you know, habitats from Earth to space, or we can just get those resources from asteroids. So space settlements are like 5 or 10 years away. And we thought that was kind of exciting. We told our editor that space settlements are 5 or 10 years away. And she was like, okay, go for it. Write about that. And then 2 years in, we were like, yeah, mass is one of many problems that need to get solved before we can settle space. And that's what the book became about.
What are some of the other problems?
Some of the other problems include we don't really know enough about how human bodies respond to the space environment. Space radiation is different than Earth radiation, and you get bombarded with it in space. But our astronauts mostly haven't been exposed to it because they are within the protection of the Earth's massive magnetic field. And that shuttles all of the charged radiation to the poles and gives us the light shows that we love so much, the Aurora Borealis and the Aurora Australis. So we don't really know how much cancer risk is going to increase. We know that no gravity, essentially, so like when you're in free fall, is very bad for bones and muscles, and maybe also bad for vision. We know that astronauts tend to have worse vision when they land, and maybe that's because fluids are shifting up and smooshing our eyes and our nerves. And we don't know if you can safely have babies in space, which should be relevant to Elon Musk, who wants to have 1 million people on Mars in the next 20 to 30 years in a self-sustaining settlement, which implies reproduction.
It does. And Musk isn't the only billionaire who talks about space settlement. There's also Jeff mm-hmm. Bezos, who I think throughout the $1 trillion number, he sees a trillion people. He sees a trillion people in space out mm-hmm. in the future. So can you talk to me about why these billionaires are so obsessed with space settlement?
Yeah. So I often get asked by people like, but what's their secret reason? And all I can report on is what they're saying publicly. And so Elon Musk is publicly saying that it's really important to him that humanity has a plan B. So if something catastrophic happened to Earth, there would be a backup somewhere that could live, even if Earth was destroyed and there was never another resupply ship. So that's his goal. He essentially wants to save humanity. And Jeff Bezos is saying that he wants to, I think the phrase is something like zone Earth as residential and light industry, and then move people and heavy industry into space. And the idea here is that if you move people and polluting stuff into space, that will save the Earth. And so by going to space, we save the Earth. But the more you think about it, the more the numbers just don't work on that. Like, we're putting on 200,000 people a day right now, and the International Space Station houses like 10 people, and that's the most expensive human-made object ever. And so how are we going to scale from 10 people to 200,000 people living there full-time in anything like the time frame you would need to protect us from things like global climate change? So anyway, I'm not convinced.
So both Musk and Bezos are able to fund this research because they can privately fund it, but is NASA looking at potentially settlements in space? Is that something that they're researching?
As far as I could tell, not really. Like, some money is going towards space settlement projects, but not a lot. The bulk of their money is going towards, you know, things like exploration missions, like sending probes out or rovers to Mars or something like that. They're not spending a bunch of money directly on the question of can we settle space and how do we make that happen?
When people talk about settling in space, they often talk about Mars. So what makes Mars so hospitable? And why can't we settle on the moon? Why isn't that more likely?
Yeah, I think hospitable is maybe not quite the right word. So everywhere in space sucks, and Mars just kind of sucks the least. So the moon is a great place to go to learn about living in space. It's like a 2 to 3 day trip away. So if something goes wrong, you can get home quickly, which is really nice. Whereas Mars is a minimum 6 month journey to get there with current propulsion techniques. And then you have to stay for something like 2 years because Mars and Earth, you know, differ in how far away they are as they travel around the sun. So you have to wait for a nice window where that distance would be shortened. So if something goes wrong on Mars, you're really stuck. But Mars has some nice features. It has a little bit of an atmosphere, which sort of makes the temperatures less extreme. So around the equator in the summer, it's like 90 Fahrenheit-ish, which is nice. But the average temperature is still like negative 90 Fahrenheit. So most of it is still really cold. But the moon, the temperature swings are, I think, negative 250 degrees Fahrenheit to about 210. So lethal in either extreme and way worse. Mars also has carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which is, you know, not great as a species that likes to primarily breathe oxygen, but you can break carbon dioxide into water and methane. Methane could be used for propellant, and we all love water. Then you can break that up so you get some oxygen. The days on Mars are about 24 hours long, so that's kind of Earth-like. But, you know, the rest of the things I have to say are pretty miserable. Like the dirt on the surface is jagged, and if you breathe it in, it might scar your lungs, making it hard to breathe. It also tends to cling to things, so you'll need to make sure you don't bring it back into the habitat. 1% atmosphere is nice, but not thick enough that you could go outside without needing to wear a spacesuit, so you'll never like feel a breeze on your face. But speaking of those breezes, it's enough to cause dust storms that cover the entire planet for weeks at a time. And that dust has perchlorates in them, which are chemicals that mess with the hormones made by our thyroid, which controls things like blood pressure and heart rate and stuff. I could go on, but it's not great.
So which countries are prioritizing, forget about colonizing Mars or settling in space, which countries are prioritizing sending a human to Mars?
The countries that are prioritizing that are the United States. So we've got the Artemis program. We're working on getting people back on the moon. And China also has some plans to get people and research stations on the moon. And so depending on who you talk to in the space community or geopolitics folks, they'd say that a new space race is emerging. So the last one was the Soviet Union and the United States. We've got a new one heating up between China and the United States.
Focused on Mars or focused on space in general?
Focused on the moon. So getting people for the United States, it's about getting people back on the moon. For China, they're talking about setting up research stations and maybe setting up like an economy, like a cislunar economy. And so
what does that mean?
Yeah. So I am not totally convinced by these arguments, but the idea would be something like the moon has a lot of helium-3. So helium-3 is something that you can find here on Earth, but it's in higher concentrations on the moon, and you can use helium-3 in fusion reactors to make a cleaner version of fusion fuel. But fusion reactors are a technology that we cannot currently use to provide electricity. So the nuclear power plants running on Earth use fission, not fusion. So we're still working on that. And there are other things that you can use to make fusion reactors work. So to me, it seems unlikely that we're going to go all the way to the moon to get this other possible fusion fuel that's going to be hard to get out of the dirt that you find on the surface of the moon, and then use that for reactors back here. Some folks will note that you can also use it for medical applications, but we do have helium-3 on Earth. It's just harder to get.
So Trump has talked about sending a man to Mars, right? Early on in his second term. Can you talk about what the administration is doing in particular? I know you said NASA's funding this Artemis program, but are there other things that the administration is doing to fulfill that mission?
So in Trump's inauguration speech, he did say something to the effect of, we're going to send someone to the moon and fulfill our manifest destiny in space. And of course, manifest destiny is like a term you don't necessarily want to hear your president saying. It implies we're going to like go there and claim it as our own, which is in violation of international law. But I should say, I got really worked up right after the inauguration speech, wrote a piece for the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists about why throwing away international law would be scary. But I haven't seen concrete steps since. Where NASA is planning on sending people to Mars soon. It sounds Elon Musk kind of wanted NASA to change their plans around. He's not very excited about the Artemis program going to the moon, but I haven't seen yet anything concrete suggesting that NASA is changing their energy to Mars, but I might have missed it.
Got it. And do you think in our lifetime we will see a man on Mars? Not colonize Mars, but just a man on Mars?
Yeah, we could see a person on Mars. It's possible. Like, if Starship is able to make the journey there, we still need to figure out problems like how do you land on the surface of Mars? So part of what makes landing on Earth easy is we have this thick atmosphere that slows our spacecraft down. It also creates a lot of heat. You got to worry about that. But part of why when we land rovers on Mars, they need to have like parachutes, or you put them in like giant airbags so they can bounce a bunch of times, is it's just really hard to slow things down. You don't want it crashing into the surface. So figuring out how to land people will be tough, but it's possible. I wouldn't rule out boots on the ground, but I would rule out settlements in the next few decades, at least.
And if we do get settlements way down the line, do you see it as people splintering off from a country? Do you see it as a country almost planting their flag and building another state out in space? How do you see this playing out potentially?
Well, it might depend on who does it. So Elon Musk, in the SpaceX terms of service for Starlink, claims that when you have people living on Mars, they won't have to follow laws from Earth. But that does break international law. According to international law, anybody who goes into space, whether they're an individual or a company, is the responsibility of some nation. So SpaceX being a U.S.-based company and Musk being a U.S. citizen, it would be the United States' job to make sure that Musk follows international law. And according to the 1967 Outer Space Treaty through the United Nations, this is the main treaty governing space, you're not allowed to claim sovereignty. So Musk can't go, he's not supposed to be able to go and say, this part of Mars belongs to us. This is a new nation that we have started. So then the question is, would the United States government stop Musk from doing something like that if he tried? They do have some leverage. So any rocket launch needs to be approved by the government. So you could say like, hey, until you all start playing ball and following international law, we're not going to let any resupply ships take off. And you could control their behavior that way. But, you know, would the Trump government, keep Elon Musk in line? I don't know what would happen there.
How much money? I mean, this for a private citizen, it just seems it's going to cost an astronomical amount. And then even for a U.S. government or any country's government, it just seems like this will all be so expensive if we're talking about colonization.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I've seen Musk suggest that he'll be able to get the price down to something like $100,000 per ticket. And the idea would be that like a middle class person could sell their house and all their possessions and move to Mars for a new start or something like that. I'm not sure I believe he'll be able to get it down to $100,000 per person. But it will be super
expensive. It sounds
expensive.
Like Burning Man in the sky.
Yeah.
So what would happen physically to humans? You talked about it a little bit earlier, but I think Senator Mark Kelly, his brother, came back from space and lost a few inches in terms of height. Mm-hmm. You talked about the gravity forces on humans affecting bones. If people end up colonizing space, does the human species evolve into something else?
I don't know. So it depends on a lot of things. So when I read the space settlement literature, I often see folks saying that we're going to need to, quote, let natural selection run its course, which is a horrible phrase that implies we're just going to have to accept that a bunch of people are going to go out there and die and we'll see who survives. I think that if we slow things down, we can find technological solutions to a lot of the potential problems. So we talked about space radiation being a potential issue. It might give people more cancer. You could put habitats underground instead and use that dirt to protect you from radiation. Doesn't sound like a nice life, but you don't have to, say, well, let's see how many of us happen to be radiation resistant and the rest of us will just die. So there's things that you could do there. But we don't know if it's going to be safe to have babies out there. And
yeah, why explain why that's more difficult in space and why there's a danger associated with it?
Sure. So astronauts in free fall around Earth, so in the space stations that are orbiting the Earth right now, they lose something like 1% of the density of their hip bone per month. And so like our bones, because they're not, having the force of gravity where when we walk, we kind of pound on our bones and that gives them the message to stay strong. Stuff just sort of starts deteriorating. You also lose a bunch of muscle mass, and rodents that have been sent to space when they were pregnant and then returned to Earth to give labor, had to do twice as many of a certain kind of contraction when they got back. And the idea was that their muscles are weak, and so they have to, you know, push twice as hard. And Mars has 40% of the gravity that we have on Earth. Maybe that will solve some of these, like, bone and muscle problems, but maybe it will just slow those problems down a little bit. And now, instead of, you know, months, or, like, I think the longest stay in space is less than a year and a half. Valery Polyakov was up for, like, 437 days. But now, instead, you're talking about, like, years or decades. And we just don't know if our bodies can survive in those environments, if a fetus can develop in that environment. There's just a lot we don't know.
If colonizing planets and space becomes real, what are the laws or rules that you would want to prioritize the most?
Yeah, so the current international law that we have is, I think, maybe not sufficient for, you know, the current advances in space. So, you know, you're not supposed to start a nation, but it's sort of unclear what you're allowed to do with resources. And there's no rules for where you're allowed to go and how long you're allowed to stay. So it seems like the international community is coming to a consensus that you can extract resources and sell them, and that that's different than saying you have sovereignty over that land. So you could, for example, go to the poles of the moon, where there are craters that have water in the form of ice in them. And you could extract that ice, melt it down, and sell that water to tourists or something, for example. And that's allowed, maybe. But then there's no rules for, like, who gets to go where. So I mentioned that the poles have craters with water. They also are the best places to set up solar panels if you're going to do it. But there's a very small area where you can find these craters in these great spots to set up solar panels. And you can imagine there being sort of a scramble for those areas. And right now, according to international law, while you can't say this belongs to me, you can plop down a research station somewhere, say you can't come anywhere near me because it's not safe. And then you can just stay there forever. And that feels kind of like sovereignty, which makes the stakes a little bit higher in this new space race with China. And so I guess I would like to see a system for who gets to go where and who gets to use what. And I guess just some more ground rules or some more conversation about how this is all going to play out. Something like we've done for the deep seabed or for Antarctica. But right now, I think there's a lot left unsaid that could cause conflict going forward.
What are the likely catalysts for someone or a country to want to flee Earth and settle in space? Is it a nuclear winter? What are we talking about?
You can't come up with anything bad enough to do to Earth that would make it worth going to Mars. Like, Mars is so much worse than anything we can imagine doing to Earth. If there was a nuclear winter, you could, like, go underwater on Earth or something, and that would probably be better than going to Mars. Space is just miserable.
Interesting. That's that's the answer to your book. Should we settle space? Can we settle space?
I mean, I should say I get why some people want to, like, wake up on an alien planet and see a sunrise. Like, I understand why that would be beautiful to some people. But I love that I can go outside and take a deep breath and feel the breeze on my face. And there's probably nowhere else in our solar system where you could do that. And that feels like a pretty big perk.
So your book is A City on Mars. Can we settle space? Should we settle space? And have we really thought this through? It sounds like the answer is no to all three.
Can we settle space? Maybe eventually. Should we settle space? I don't know. Maybe. And have we really thought this through? No, absolutely not. We have not yet.
The book is so good. Kelly, thank you so much for joining me. You can buy it anywhere that you can buy books. And I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.